From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, whoever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. And let's get your Independence Day weekend underway. 244 years. Wow. Coronavirus infections rose in 40 out of 50 states heading into what will be a very different July 4th weekend as the virus continues to make a resurgence following weeks of nationwide containment measures that have been reimposed in many areas amid the upswing. In four states where outbreaks are the most severe, Arizona, California, Florida, and Texas, more than 25,000 new COVID-19 cases were confirmed. Texas Governor Greg Abbott ordered the wearing of masks in counties with 20 or more positive coronavirus cases. Florida has confirmed more than 10,000 new cases, 325 new hospitalizations. Nebraska, South Dakota are the only two states outside the Northeast to see a downward trend. Several Northeastern states have seen new infections decline, including New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Jersey. Officials in Colorado are watching nearby states where infections have increased. Researchers at the Henry Ford Health System in Southeast Michigan have found that the early administration of the drug hydroxychloroquine makes hospitalized patients substantially less likely to die. Now, this is a story that Dr. Jerome Corsi has been following for some time now. Jerry, finally, this gets some positive news, doesn't it?
Very much so, George. And there's a couple of studies coming out. Also, Dr. Zelenko's study is now published showing positive effects of hydroxychloroquine and zinc used early on in the disease or as preventatives. And this is in contrast to the discredited studies that were administering hydroxychloroquine to very sick or in-hospital patients, where the results were skewed, and that's not the stage of the disease where the doctors are saying hydroxychloroquine works. I think this really reverses the entire narrative and lends support to the fact that hydroxychloroquine is still a FDA-approved medication that can be prescribed off-label by physicians for COVID-19.
Once prescribed, and if you get it early before this coronavirus really takes hold, you have a great chance of fighting it, don't you?
Yes, and I think also, George, for preventative, especially if we're seeing another surge or even a new virus, which looks like it's occurring in China, I think the world, you know, Russia, for instance, has gotten enough hydroxychloroquine being produced for the entire population. Many countries are going in this direction, and I think that plus the zinc protocol that Dr. Zelenko has recommended are increasingly getting scientific support.
CorsiNation.com, that's Jerry's website. Jerry, thanks again for all the work you do for us. Well, parents, take heed. For the most part, the pandemic has restricted motion in America. But one exception has been a large-scale nationwide reshuffling of humans between homes. Before the coronavirus came to the United States, many of the country's young adults were working, studying, building lives on their own. Now a great deal of them are back living with their parents. The number of American adults who have returned to living at home is enormous. A recent analysis of government data by the real estate website Zillow.com indicated that about 2.9 million adults moved in with a parent or grandparent in March, April, or May. And if college students were included, it zoomed. Wow. As of today, World UFO Day, Pennsylvania was the fifth best state for UFO sightings from January 2019 through June of 2020. In the period, folks in Pennsylvania reported 358 sightings of strange lights and objects in the sky. That placed Pennsylvania behind California, Florida, Washington, and Texas. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center with us. Peter, do those numbers seem to hold up with your calls?
It's hard to say, George. I haven't looked at them really very closely, and those numbers can be adjusted dramatically by sightings of Starlink satellites and so on. So I would take those claims with a grain of salt if I were you.
All right, my friend, what do you got for us tonight?
Well, good evening and happy Independence Day to you and members of the Coast audience. For weeks, George, I've been planning to tick off my update tonight with let's kick off my update tonight with a few words about the Great Tunguska explosion that, as you know, occurred in the early morning of June 30th, 1908. But, of course, I was scooped by Dr. Sky, Stephen Cate's excellent discussion of that.
But you were there. You were a witness, so that makes it even more important, right?
The dramatic events during his weekly appearance on Monday of this week. However, the reason I dare bring up the subject again is that Stephen quite unambiguously ascribes the explosion to a major asteroid. But I believe there's enough powerful evidence to challenge the asteroid theory in favor of some type of nuclear event or some type of event that we don't yet understand. I'd like to make just a few points, hoping to share with the Coast audience just how much of a mystery the Tunguska event remains and how poor our understanding of it is.
Okay.
The first point I'd like to cite is that in 93 years of fairly extensive research in the area of the Tunguska explosion, no one has yet succeeded in finding either a crater or even a major fragment from the exploding body. And most researchers admit just how strange that fact is. The only remnants that have been found are tiny glass spheres, in Russian called Stiklenia Shariki, the origin of which is not fully understood and which are not easily explained away by a straightforward asteroid theory. The second and last point I'd like to make about it involves the burns that were seen at the time of both humans and animals, and reportedly even of rocks, George.
Hmm.
Convincing reports collected by local Russian Orthodox priests from survivors of the explosion even suggest that both reindeer and humans near the epicenter of the explosion allegedly were vaporized, and those further from the epicenter developed frightful superating burn-type wounds which lasted for months. For lack of any better term, the Russians called it consumptia or consumption. They didn't know what had caused it. Anyway, I wish to leave the Coast audience with the notion that there are alternative explanations to what happened aside from the asteroid or meteor theory. Just quickly, a couple of reports, more recent reports. First one I'd like to deal with comes from Tuesday night of this week, Kokomo, Indiana. Husband and wife saw two magenta-colored lights, very bright lights, that got so close to them, George, that they actually illuminated the ground a magenta red. Have no idea what they were, but they suddenly streaked off and disappeared. The second report comes from Ashland, Oregon. A mother and son saw this is also on the 30th of June at 7:28 p.m. in Ashland, Oregon, they saw a very metallic-looking sphere that hovered in the area for several minutes, and then suddenly must have just zipped off because the woman blinked and it was no longer there. And last report comes from tonight, Quitman, Mississippi. A gentleman reported that he saw a flashing light very stationary initially, and it suddenly moved a large distance across the sky and stopped abruptly. And it stayed in one place for at least 10 minutes. Then it went off in a different direction and just disappeared from his sight. So that's my report. I'm a little over time. I apologize, but I hope everybody has a safe 4th of July.
You got it. Thanks, Peter. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, the paranormal pendulum, dowsing the departed. Wait till you hear this story with Dan Baldwin next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our special guest Dan Baldwin with us, back with us. He is an author, co-author. He's a ghostwriter, too, with more than 60 published works, 50 under someone else's name. Dan discovered his psychic abilities late in life and calls himself a psychic on training wheels. Pendulum dowsing is his skill. His latest book is called The Paranormal Pendulum. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Great to be back with you.
How are you? Everything fine with you, your family, down under, wherever you may be these days?
We're doing just fine out here.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. It's a full moon. I'm on Coast to Coast AM. It's the 4th of July.
Doesn't get any better, does it?
Better than that.
I love it. Hey, tell me about, first of all, explain what dowsing and the pendulum are to people.
Okay, basically everybody's familiar with the old farmer out there with the Y-shaped stick looking for water.
That's right.
The witching stick. Well, I do pendulum dowsing, and it's exactly the same principle, except that I use a weight on a string. And basically, I'm oversimplifying, but if you ask questions, it goes through your subconscious, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But a right swing would be a yes answer. A left swing would be a no answer. And if you get a back and forth movement, you need to ask the question in a different manner. It's extremely simple.
Is it the subconscious that's doing it, or some reflex action in your arm? What's doing it? Because you're just holding it with your fingers,
right?
Too, right?
The actual movement of the pendulum is through your finger muscles. I mean, there's nothing magic whatsoever about the pendulum. It's a rock on a string. But the movement is directed by your subconscious, which is directed by the higher power. And, you define the higher power however you want to define that. But it comes through the subconscious mind.
Do you need to keep your elbow on a table, or you can just hold it up in midair?
Yeah, just find whatever is most comfortable for you. Generally, if you do a long-term session, you'll want to rest your elbow, but it doesn't matter.
Years ago, I was doing this for fun at a party, and I had made a big round circle, and I had yes up and down, no left and right, and I would have people hold a pendulum in the middle, and I would say, mentally stop it, and it would stop right in the middle. And now I'd say, think yes. I was trying to tune these people up, so I said, think yes, and the pendulum would go up and down, up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, think no. It would come to a stop, then it would go left and right. No. It was truly amazing. Well, I used it as almost like a lie detector test. And I would ask people questions, and I'd see the yes or the no, and then I would say, all right, you're telling the truth. No, you're not. And I was right all the time. Well, this guy was there doing it with his wife, and everybody was just doing it as a gag. And some guy was saying, okay, did you ever have an affair on your wife? It started going yes. He dropped it and ran out of the room.
Yeah.
It really is a truth seeker too, isn't it?
If you do it right, it's pure truth. It's all truth. Yes or no. I mean, there's no room for interpretation, which is why I love it. I mean, you don't have to sit down and figure out, what does that crack in the crystal ball? What does that symbolize? You ask a question and it's yes or it's no.
That's amazing. Now, tell me about the book, The Paranormal Pendulum.
It's a real. I wrote it for two audiences, basically.
And you finally put your name on it.
Something I rarely get to do. But I ran into a lot of people who, they don't want to become professional mediums, and they're not mediums, but they want to talk to mom or dad or Uncle Fred, or they have a neighbor they want to talk to who was really nice to them, and they're under the feeling that they have to be a medium, that they have to go out and buy a bunch of expensive electronic equipment, and they've got to wait till midnight to go out into the haunted house to make contact with the spirit world. All of that works, but you don't have to use that stuff. You can get a rock on a string. If you can hold a rock on a string, you can talk to the spirit world.
And there's some nice companies for a very inexpensive price. We'll sell you these pendulums, too.
Yeah, you go down. There'll be a psychic bookstore in your neighborhood that'll have very inexpensive pendulums. And in fact, one time I was out with doing a research, and I forgot my pendulum. And I was, 200 miles from the house. And so I went back into my truck. I cut off a shoestring, picked up a pebble off the ground, tied it up, and that was my pendulum.
And it works.
And it works. I still use it today. It's my backup pendulum.
You know where the Ouija board uses the planchette, and, one person or a couple people have their fingertips on it, and it does start moving. And, again, it may be that same reflex action. I'm not sure. Some people with the Ouija board claim it's the spirits that are doing it and everything else. But is the pendulum a little like the planchette on a Ouija board?
I have no experience with the Ouija board, but I would say probably 100% yes. I imagine it's your subconscious mind moving the planchette, just the way your subconscious mind directs the movement of the pendulum. That would be my guess.
And you do this now for fun or for a living?
Oh, not for a living. It's a gift, and I'm not supposed. I make my living writing. That's how I'm
that's
supposed
you.
To earn my living. And I use the pendulum for lack of a better term, good works.
How long has the pendulum been working in the psychic realm since the beginning of mankind?
We know it goes. We know dowsing goes back at least as far as the ancient Egyptians. There are depictions on some of the Egyptian monuments of people dowsing. So it goes back, 4,000 or 5,000 years at least. So something that's been around for that long, there's got to be something to it.
When you hold the pendulum, are you doing it for yourself, or can you do it for others, or should they be doing it?
When I do it, I do it for myself. I also do it for others, and the others do not have to be present.
I'm wondering, when we take calls next hour,
yeah,
in addition to just questions for you, if some people want to ask you through the pendulum some question. It's got to be a yes or no, right?
Yeah.
Some yes or no question.
Yeah.
If you could answer that for them, holding a pendulum, can you do that?
I would be hesitant to do that simply because I have a process. It's a simple process that I go through, but it involves meditation and
okay,
getting my mind cool, calm, and collected. And this is just, it's not the right environment.
Okay.
When I do a presentation, I will demonstrate it, but I don't do readings.
Okay. Can you teach people via the phone on how to do it?
Yeah. I mean, the learning curve is remarkably simple and short.
Give us a quick highlight.
Okay. Basically, you hold the pendulum on the string, rock on the string, whatever the weight is, and it doesn't matter what that weight is. It can be rock, crystal, wood. I have them all. And you clear your mind and just remain focused and ask a question.
Yes or no?
Yes or no. It has to be a yes or no question. You can't ask multiple choice questions.
That's because of the way it moves.
Right. And, your subconscious addresses the higher power answers, goes down through the subconscious. The subconscious directs the movements of your hands, and that's pretty much it. The hard part, the really hard part, is keeping your mind neutral. For example, we've talked before about the missing person stuff that I've done.
Right, right.
And if you're thinking, is the little beautiful little 5-year-old girl alive? If you're thinking yes, you're going to get a yes.
You're going to get a yes.
You're going to get
right.
a yes.
You've got to clear your mind.
Yeah, and you've got to focus on what you're doing.
It's a little like remote viewing, in that when you're trying to remote view, you can't let outside thoughts enter your head. You got to kind of keep it clean.
Right. If you're trying to find, say if you're out here trying to find the lost Dutchman mine, and you're asking questions about the lost Dutchman mine, but you're thinking about, should I have hamburgers or hot dogs for supper, you're going to get the answer to what you're thinking about.
Now, does the pendulum, Dan, work on things you really know, the person, or is it for things that also could be unknown and you're asking the pendulum a question?
Virtually everything I ask is something I don't know.
Okay, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, you're asking about life in the past or life on the other side.
Now, what is it that draws that answer to you through the pendulum? Or who does it?
Well, again, it's you're talking about the higher power working through your human subconscious mind. That's the way it works.
Is it the spirit world?
Well, you're in contact with the spirit world, and one of the reasons, and this is just my theory, but one of the reasons I think the pendulum works so well in the spirit world is that you've got spirits who can talk to the higher power directly, and the higher power can then work down through your subconscious. In other words, the spirit doesn't have to go through a spirit box or a recording device or anything like that.
Well, and the subtitle to your book, The Paranormal Pendulum, is Dowsing the Departed. Explain that part.
Well, I've gotten into this in the last 4 or 5 years, started talking to people and doing research primarily for, historical record, trying to find out, what was it like back in the 1880s or the 1700s, and started getting answers and finding interesting things and talking to very interesting people, varied backgrounds, various time frames, and in the last year, it's beginning to slide toward what's it like at the moment of death, at the moment of passing, what's it like? Is there a white light? Do you go through a white light? What's it like on the other side? That sort of thing.
If the pendulum does not move, if it just stays in the middle, what does that tell you?
Chances are, physically maybe you're tired, mentally you're not focused. If you're trying to douse the spirit world, there may not be anybody show up. You know, there's no guarantee that a spirit will show up. It may be just that this is not the right time for you to do it.
Okay, stay with us, Dan. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about the paranormal pendulum, and then we'll take phone calls with Dan Baldwin next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dan Baldwin with us. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about his latest work called The Paranormal Pendulum. Dan, kind of take us through how it would work for a dearly departed. How would you use it?
Okay, again, the learning curve on this for everybody out there is extremely short. It's very easy. What I normally do is I will sit down in the location, try to get acclimated to the location, the grounding, if you want to call it that, and meditate for 5 or 10 minutes just to cool and calm the mind, and then hold the pendulum and just start asking questions. First question is, are there any spirits here? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a yes. And then it's just a matter of asking yes or no questions to find out, you know, is this a male spirit, yes or no, female spirit? Are you a relative? Did you live here in the 1880s? You know, that sort of thing. And you just keep asking questions. And you finally hone in. If you're looking for a specific type of answers, you hone in on those answers. If you just want to converse, you just converse.
Do the spirits sometimes show a sense of humor?
Yeah, quite frequently.
They do, huh?
And a lot of, we've asked several spirits about this, and we've got the same answers. They can be playful. And one thing I would like to point out to the audience there, a lot of your reactions when you go into doing pendulum research with the paranormal, especially with the departed, a lot depends on what you expect to get. In other words, if you walk in and you're expecting a negative experience, whatever happens to you, you're going to interpret that as a negative experience. A good example of that is we were doing a research in a museum, and a woman who was expecting a good experience said, "Somebody just brushed my hair."
Huh.
And she was delighted. She said, "Oh, the ghost touched my hair. This is wonderful." If she had been going in expecting a negative experience, it would have been, you know, an evil spirit grabbed my hair. So, you know, what I'm saying is go into a session with an open mind and keep in mind that all the spirits I've ever encountered are friendly folks. And don't interpret something that happens automatically as a negative experience, because probably it's not. In fact, I've never had a negative experience.
Can dowsing predict the future or only what is?
I think primarily only what is. I've had some modest success. Again, back to the missing kid stuff, asking the question, is it likely that such and such would happen? But as far as specific prediction of the future, I haven't had any success at that at all.
I mean, you can't pick lottery numbers or things like that.
Yeah, and for me, people ask me that. If you're so good and you're so serious about this, why haven't you won the lottery? Well, that's an abuse of the gift.
It backfires, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to do that. And besides, you're predicting, you're trying to douse something that hasn't yet happened.
Now, if a spirit is evil,
mm-hmm.
does that come through on a pendulum? I mean, does the pendulum swing wildly or anything like that?
The only way I can answer that is I've never had a negative experience, not one. So I can't really answer that honestly.
Maybe that's a good thing, though.
I think mostly when people have negative experiences, and I don't negate the fact that there are negative forces out there, don't get me wrong on that, but I think a lot of the so-called negative experiences people have are just interpretations of something, often a playful ghost. Most of the people I've talked to in the spirit realm are friendly people. They're there, you know, they don't have to show up. They don't have to communicate. They're there because they want to.
If you're holding the pendulum,
mm-hmm.
and I'm standing next to you,
mm-hmm.
can I influence it? Have you ever tried that before?
No, I don't think so, because it's I'm the one that's in contact with the pendulum.
You have to physically be touching it.
You could influence me, you know, you could disturb me or,
right.
you know, something like that.
Think yes, or something like that. But I can't mentally change the direction of it.
No, because it's got to come through me. But again, you could affect it. You could, you know, butt me on the shoulder or make a snide remark,
right.
or something like that.
Okay, it's that sensitive, though, isn't it?
But again, it's that simple. Like I said, really, if you can hold a rock on a string, you can communicate with the departed.
I've got a couple of them, and they're kind of neat. I mean, they're polished and stuff like that. I mean, it actually looks like a neat piece of jewelry.
Yeah, some of them are quite elaborate. I like the ones that have I do a lot of matte dowsing, so I like the large ones that have an elongated diamond shape with a very, very pointed tip, because I use it on the map.
Is there a certain stone or material that may be a little more receptive to this than something else?
That would probably be a personal thing if you have a personal stone that you feel close to. But as far as I go, I go into a store that sells pendulum and I get the pretty one, the one that I like.
Yeah.
And again, I have them made out of wood. I have them made out of metal. I have them out of stone.
I know a guy who uses a sawed-off bullet.
Yeah, anything will work. Told you earlier, I used a rock on a shoestring.
Well, as long as it doesn't have to be that heavy, does it?
No.
Just enough to pull the string down.
Exactly, just a weight on the string. Now, I like the heavy ones because most of my work is outdoors, so I like the heavy one just because of the wind factor.
Now, you were watching a British ghost hunting show.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I'm glad you brought that up. The secondary group of people I would like to consider the pendulum that I wrote this book for comes out of that program. It was a British ghost hunting show, and it was a typical ghost hunting show. They go out at night. They've got the green night vision goggles and everything. They've had their electronic equipment, and I guess it was a voice box. It was one of those, and they heard a desperate plea from a woman, "Help me," and they didn't. And the reason they didn't, they couldn't do anything else. All they could do was stand there and ask questions and hope to get another, EVP out of the situation. And they never got another EVP. So there was nothing they could do to help that desperate spirit. If they had had the pendulum, they could have, continued the session and had an elongated conversation with that spirit. Who are you? What's your trouble? Are you trapped over here on this side? Is somebody acting? That kind of thing.
Sure.
Yes or no questions. And eventually, they probably could have helped that desperate woman out because they had another effective tool that allowed them to have extended conversations.
Now, they also use dowsing, of course, for finding oil and everything else. Now, how does that work? It's the same principle, isn't it?
Same principle. Well, you could use map dowsing. In other words, you have some property in say, Texas that it's near an oil field. You could ask, is there oil on my property?
And you hold it over a map?
Then you could ask take a map of the property, preferably a topological map, and you could just move the pendulum over the map. If you got a yes answer, there is oil, or you could take a pencil and hold it in one hand and the pendulum in the other, and said, give me a yes answer when I'm on the best place to dig. Then you could douse, how deep is it?
When I was a kid, I thought that the branch that the person was holding when he was looking for oil or water or anything else was kind of like magnetic or something.
Yeah.
It's really the individual, isn't it?
Right. Now, there is a pendulum called a witness, and it's a hollow pendulum that you fill up with a sample of whatever you're looking for. So, for example, if you're looking for oil, you would put oil inside the pendulum and use that to help you douse. But if you use 3-in-1 oil, you're going to find 3-in-1 oil. You're not going to find the good stuff.
We're going to take calls next hour with Dan Baldwin. We're not going to do readings or anything like that. Just try to keep it to quick questions about the spirit world or the pendulums and how they work. And you've been doing this for how many years now?
Well, I've been doing the pendulum for more than 20 years. I've been doing the communicating with the deceased probably about 5 years.
What got you to deal with the pendulum and then the deceased?
Well, the pendulum started way back. I don't hear voices. I'm not a clairaudient, but one night I heard a voice that said, "Go find missing children." And that's what got me started.
Really? Good
yeah,
for
really,
you.
Yeah, honest to God. And I thought I was going nuts, And for about 3 months, I ignored it, and that feeling would not go away. And then I realized, I'm not a detective. I'm not a trained investigator. And it hit me, maybe I'm psychic. And I started hanging around psychic bookstores, and eventually I saw a woman doing the pendulum, and I said, "That's for me."
Did anybody train you, or did you do this yourself?
Pretty much, I would say 90% self-trained, self-taught. I've got some pretty good advice along the way, but primarily it's hit or miss. Get out there and do it.
Have spirits learned that you have this gift, and they kind of like bombard you?
Not really. One thing I've learned. If you go to a place and ask a spirit to show up, they're probably going to show up just because they want to talk. And it's, I don't think it's my personality.
How do you know you're not being deceived by them, Dave?
Good question. And you don't.
At all.
It's like it was. It's like any other interview. I mean, you know, I could be, you know, lying to you. I'm not, but I could be. But it's like conducting any other
interview. I would know, Dave.
But you would know, and you would do research, and you would never have me back on your program again. So, yeah, you can ask a question, and if somebody's lying, chances are you can douse enough information to find out whether or not that person is lying to you.
Do they make the yes or no cards? Because it would make it easier when you're dowsing.
There are charts you can use. In fact, when I'm trying to douse somebody's name, I've got an alphabet chart so that I can go, you know, what's the first letter of your last name, and it can go to that letter.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and they're
but mostly it's got to be a yes or no.
Primarily, yeah.
What are the spirits trying to communicate with us? What do they want?
Again, that will depend on the individual situation. We were dealing with, we may have talked about this earlier, but we were dealing with the situation of a spirit who was trapped on this side. He was a murderer, and he was afraid to cross over. And we were doing a session, and we discovered him by accident. And we helped him cross over with the help of his murder victim, who came over to help us help him cross over. And the murder victim was his brother. He killed his brother. This was back in the 1880s. And his brother came over to help. He saw what we were trying to do, in other words, and he came over to help us help his brother cross over. That was quite an experience.
But primarily it's used for things that have happened. You can't ask it questions like, you know, will Donald Trump get reelected, yes or no? It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. It's really good. One of the reasons I like doing this is I have a lot of friends. In fact, you know, my friend Rhonda and Dwight Hull that have been on with me before. They use it for historical research. Yeah, it's a legitimate historical research tool. So they're actually using the gift for that. My friend George Sewell, who was helping me with this book, he and I are using it as a research tool to find out what it's like on the other side.
And what have you found out?
Oh, a lot of interesting stuff. A lot of interesting stuff.
There aren't just simple clouds up there, are there?
No. One of the most fascinating things I found out is when you cross over, there are lots of options. Lots of options.
You talk about reincarnation, too?
Yeah, that too. We can get into that if you want to. But
that's I believe that. That's a real thing.
There's definitely something to that, yeah.
And these spirits are connected. Do you sometimes do dowsing in certain areas that are more, receptive, like a cemetery? I would think if you're in a cemetery, you're going to have spirits coming at you like crazy.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, if you were a spirit and you could come back to Earth, would you go to a cemetery?
I would not.
Where would you go? Like, if you're in Tombstone, would you go to Boot Hill or would you go to the Birdcage Theater?
I'd go to the theater. I'd go to a local pub or someplace
Yeah, exactly.
Where there's some fun.
The reason we found out, the cemeteries I've been to, they have shown up at the cemetery because I was there, not because they were hanging out at the cemetery or that they were trapped at the cemetery. They just saw us and said, well, those look like nice folks. Let's go talk with them. And they came to the cemetery because we were there.
Have you ever held the pendulum and it just didn't work? It didn't move?
Early on, that happened a couple of times. That is very rare. That is very rare.
What would have caused that?
Chances are it would be in me and not the spirit world or the subconscious. It was just maybe I was tired.
Not tuned in?
Not tuned in properly. Yeah, my mind was, you know. A psychic work is like anything else. If you've had a bad day, you're probably not going to have a good session. If you've had a fight with your spouse, or if you're taking a lot of flu medication, yeah, anything that would affect you normally will probably affect you during your session. That would probably be it, something along that line.
I mean, if you were to ask it about, you know, where did the COVID-19 start? Would it over a map? Would it go to China, or how would that work?
Well, it would if you're doing it right, it would go to where it started, yeah.
It would.
Yeah, you could start by asking, you know, did the COVID-19 virus start in China? You get a yes or no. If you got a yes, get your map out of China. You know, is it north of this river or south of that river? Is it in this city, particularly here?
So you pinpoint it. You might have to ask it 20 questions, right?
You could get down to street addresses if you wanted to.
Jeez.
Again, it's a process of elimination. It's simple. It's time-consuming, but it's as simple as it can be.
Now, again, though, Dan, who is it or what is it that's giving you the answers? Because I don't know the answer. So who's giving it to me if I'm holding up the pendulum?
If you're investigating the spirit and you're talking to the spirit, it is the spirit who has given the answer. If you're just doing a session trying to find
like the virus started,
you're talking to the higher power.
Okay, so it's the higher power that's giving you the information through the pendulum.
Right. Basically, yeah, your pendulum is in front of you, and your conscious mind is focused on the pendulum, so that your conscious mind is basically in neutral.
Is the pendulum like an antenna?
Yeah, it's a receptor or a resonator, an antenna. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But it's
just a device. It's not magic.
Okay. Would the wire or the string, whatever you use to hold it up, does that have anything to do with it?
No.
Okay.
It's just a tool.
So it doesn't have to be magnetic or anything like that.
No, just once you start working with it, you'll find yourself more comfortable maybe with stone than with metal. But
right.
that's a personal thing.
Some of the items, some of the pendulums are a little more balanced, and they work better, mm-hmm. I think, because of the way you can hold it.
Yeah, I don't like the fancy ones with bangles and baubles on them.
I don't
like real simple lines, straightforward, solid weight.
Oh, I like the gizmos.
Yeah. Well, that's what works for you, and that's fine.
Give us your website, Daniel.
Yeah. To get the book, it's www.fournightspress.com, or you can check up on me at www.danbaldwin.com. And if you want to get the book, it's anywhere you buy your books, ebook or paperback. It's everywhere.
And this is called The Paranormal Pendulum, Dowsing the Departed.
That's correct.
With your name, you've got a couple others out there. I think we were on talking about the Psychic Detective, weren't we?
Yeah, I've got the Psychic Detective Guidebook. I've got another basic pendulum book, and I've got a book about missing person cases. They are not yet lost that I worked on.
Lots of missing people in this planet.
You would be astounded at the number of people who go missing every day.
Where do they go?
Nobody knows.
It's incredible. You know David Politis, who has written a book about people missing from parks?
I've heard the name. I haven't read the book.
Yeah, he's got a great book called Missing 411, and it's bizarre. I mean, parents are with their kids. They turn around, and the kids are gone.
Absolutely. I've read a couple of cases like that.
Where did they go?
I have no idea.
All right, stay with us, Daniel. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.